Since 9/11, the Tunnel to Towers Foundation has been committed to improving the lives of America's veterans, first responders, and their families. For over 20 years, the foundation has helped America keep its solemn promise to never forget. Tunnel to Towers provides mortgage-free homes to Gold Star families and the families of fallen first responders with young children, and builds specially adapted smart homes for catastrophically injured veterans, as well as work to eradicate veteran homelessness. David Marshall served in the Army during World War II and fought in the Battle of the Bulge. He's never forgotten the sacrifices of his comrades in arms, nor the efforts of first responders on 9/11 and in the days and months that followed. He is a loyal and proud foundation donor. Tunnel to Towers is committed to supporting veterans, first responders, and their families, and so many of them need your help. Join the foundation on its mission to do good and never forget. Donate $11 a month to Tunnel to Towers at t2t.org. That's T, the number 2T.org.
Hey, it's Will Friedle.
And Sabrina Bryan.
And we're the hosts of the new podcast, Magical Rewind.
You may know us from some of your favorite childhood TV movies, like My Date with the President's Daughter.
And the Cheetah Girls movies.
Together, we're sitting down to watch all the movies you grew up with and chat with some of your favorite stars and crew that made these iconic movies happen.
So kick back, grab your popcorn, and join us. Listen to Magical Rewind on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Brought to you by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
When you drive a vehicle so reliable it's backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, you stop thinking about what you can't do and start doing what you never thought possible. Visit your local Kia dealer today to see what you're capable of in a vehicle that inspires confidence around every corner. Kia. Movement that inspires.
Call 800-333-4KIA for details. Always drive safely. Limited inventory available. Warranties include 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain and 5-year, 60,000-mile basic. Warranties are limited. See retailer for details.
More Than a Movie is back with Season 2. I'm your host, Alex Fumero. And each week, I'm going to talk to the people behind your favorite movies. From The Godfather, Andy Garcia.
He has the smarts of Vito, the temper of Sonny, the warmth of Fredo, and the coldness of Michael.
To the legend behind La Bamba, Lou Diamond Phillips.
When I walked in, I didn't think I had a shot at Richie because John Stamos's picture was already up on the wall.
Listen to More Than a Movie on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to the Buck Sexton Show podcast. Make sure you subscribe to the podcast on the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, everybody, welcome to another episode of the Buck Sexton Show. And with me, first time on the program, Jackson Hinkle. He is an independent political analyst. He is described as, here on Twitter, the most censored man on YouTube. So I'm going to have to ask you a bit about that. We're going to talk Ukraine, 2024, California versus Florida, all kinds of good things. Jackson, welcome. Good to have you on.
Thanks for having me on.
Let's start, if I may, Ukraine. I want to get to Ukraine. Did you were on Tucker's show. I bring it up, brings a tear to my eye. But anyway, you were on Tucker's show. Were you talking Ukraine that time, or was it a different topic? I can't remember now.
Yeah, Tucker did a monologue about Joe Biden's infamous red background speech where he looked like Satan himself in the pits of hell. And then he did a monologue comparing, Joe Biden's policies, his authoritarian policies, to Zelensky's authoritarian policies in Ukraine. And it was really cool. And I went on to talk about and compare those two things.
Oh, okay. Yes. Well, that makes, so it was, there. I knew there was a Ukraine tie-in, but it was a few months back. So here's my thing. Let me put this premise out to you. Tell me what you think about this. So I remember being in Iraq and being in Afghanistan with the CIA years ago. And certainly in the context of Afghanistan, knowing I was there in 2010, knowing that there's no chance this is going to work, like this plan that we're sending more and more people. This thing of we're going to have a self-sustaining and democratic Afghanistan that was just never actually going to happen. But nobody was willing to say it, that, first of all, step one, that, and then, OK, so what are we doing here? In Ukraine, I keep saying to everybody, all right, so Republicans don't like that we're spending so much money. I should say not Republicans. Some Republicans don't like that we're spending so much money and that we're as involved as we are, that we're sending F-16s, that we're sending Abrams tanks, that Russia has thousands of nukes. And but I never hear anybody say, what should we do? Like, what is the action item? Like, in a Jackson Hinkle
foreign policy, presidency? What is Ukraine policy?
You bring up a good point, really good point. Just in the same way when it comes to Afghanistan or Iraq or Syria, for that matter, everyone in the State Department, everyone in, well, most people within the Pentagon are talking about how we're not going to stop with this Ukraine business until Ukraine is victorious, but they'll never, ever identify what victory means for Ukraine. Some people have come out and said, like, I saw DeSantis came out and say that if he could snap his fingers, he'd give all of the Donbass and all of Crimea back to Ukraine immediately. The fact of the matter is, as you put it so bluntly with the situation in Afghanistan, it's just not possible. You know, whatever we try to do there, it's not going to work. Russia's already taken most of the Donbass. And they, I mean, Crimea voted by a margin of 97% in 2014 to join the Russian Federation. So whatever those in the deep state want, you know, their deepest wants and wishes will never be granted. The only thing that they might get close to is, you know, World War III and nuclear warfare, which is obviously something that most rational, sane human beings don't want. But as for, you said, what would be my stated goal if I was the one with the reins regarding Ukraine right now? I mean, ideally, none of this would have happened in the first place. Ideally, you could have prevented this by the Obama administration not launching a coup on the sovereign, democratically elected government of Ukraine in 2014, or, you know, encouraging the Zelensky government anytime between 2019 to 2022 to actually adhere to the various peace accords that Putin had proposed for the Donbass. As for now, it's a little bit too little too late. I mean, Russia's already sacrificed so much to try and achieve their goal, which I think is eventually going to be to not only demilitarize Ukraine and get rid of the Zelensky administration in its entirety, but probably to try and landlock Ukraine and conquer everything from Nikolaev to Odessa all the way up to Transnistria. So it's going to be a long time before they can do that. I mean, militarily, they're moving slowly but steadily. So the question of whether or not a peace, you know, plan could be struck right now is it's up in the air because they've already sacrificed so much. So why would they stop now?
So I always want to ask though. So even like, let's say if we took the Trump America First line on this one, right? If we were to have President Trump, I would want to know, do we pull the funding entirely at a certain date? So do we say, look, you guys have a year to figure this out. You have 6 months to figure this out, 3 months, whatever it may be. And after that, we start cycling down the funding. And if not, then I always say to people, so just, you know, Jackson, when the war broke out in, what was it now, February of 2022, on my radio show, I was saying, first of all this stuff about how the Ukrainians were going to just roll back. Remember that there was the stand in Kyiv, and then it was, oh, the Russians are going to, I said, everyone's underestimating the Russian war machine, Russia's commitment to land warfare, grinding it down over time, taking massive casualties if they have to. I'm like, there's just this notion of like the brave Ukrainian resistance is going to now roll the Russians. It's just not going to happen. And that this is going to eventually cost, unless we get a peace settlement, trillions of US dollars, right? I mean, I know that sounds kind of crazy, or maybe it sounded crazy to people then. But now we're at about, I don't know, on the books, 130 billion, 150 billion, something like that. War has absolutely no end in sight whatsoever. So are we in for trillions? And if we shouldn't be in for trillions, then shouldn't we set a limit to how much money we're going to spend on a war that most Americans say, why exactly is this my problem?
Yeah, that's a great question. And it was Joseph Borrell, who's one of the top policy officials for the European Commission. He came out about a week and a half ago and said, well, I know how to end the war in Ukraine. The quickest, most simple way to end the war in Ukraine is if the West stops supplying Ukraine with money and aid and weapons, because if they did that, it would be over, as he put it, within days. So that's a Western pro-Ukraine voice who's leading up the policy on this, saying that very thing. As for, you know, how much money we could be in the hole on this venture, which is a suicide mission, by the way, yeah, it could be trillions at the end of the day. And I don't think we'll ever really know how much money is being siphoned off for this, or how much money has been pumped into Ukraine since, I mean, since at least 2014. You look back at U.S. Meddling in Ukraine, especially within the nationalist elements of Ukraine. You can go all the way back to World War II, the Cold War. Of course, things heated up dramatically 2004 and then again in 2014. But, you know, the real point that I think should be drawn here is exactly what you said. Russia is a war machine. You know, we can look back in history. It's not really a good idea to fight Russia, especially, you know, on their Ukrainian border. And even more, especially at a time like winter, you know, and that's when Ukraine was preparing this large counteroffensive that still has not materialized. I mean, you can look back to Napoleon, you can look back to Hitler. It is just not a good idea to go to Russia in this region at the time they did it. And Russia is dead serious about the ambitions and the goals that they have put forward here, which are demilitarization of Ukraine and denazification, as Putin stated back on February 24th of 2022. And how do we know that they're serious? How do we know that they're committed to this? We know that because they see the NATO threat in Ukraine and now in some Nordic states as well, but most specifically in Ukraine, as an existential fight. And when there are existential threats to Russia, not only the Russian government, not only the Russian military, but the Russian people stop at nothing to achieve victory. We saw that in World War II. There were 27 million people dead serious about achieving victory, and they did do it. And this is no different. I mean, they see it as a very similar threat. There are many historical comparisons that can be made. You know, they always say history doesn't repeat itself, but it rhymes. And there's surely a lot of rhyming between what we're seeing right now with this NATO threat against Russia and Ukraine and the threats that the Third Reich posed against the Soviet Union back in World War II.
So now I want to switch gears with you, Jackson, in a second and ask you about how you're the most censored man on YouTube. We got to check that out in a second. I see that that tagline in your Twitter. We'll come back to that in a moment. But, you know, this past week I did something really special, folks. I got to sit down with an amazing market forecaster, a person with over 50 years of Wall Street experience. Just happens to be my dad. That's right, Mason Sexton. He came out of, not retirement, but out of advising hedge funds behind the scenes for many years, being a consultant to them, getting paid for his advice and his analysis to tell people out there, people like you, about the great disruption of 2023. Now, look, my dad back in the day on TV, he predicted the stock market crash of 1987. That's just a matter of public record. He's also predicted lots of major turns, lots of tops and lots of big calls in the market. And in this interview I did with him, he revealed the exact date, actually the day this July, when he thinks the market is just going to get really ugly. And then he also has a 3-year forecast. You've got to hear about this, where he thinks the markets are going. So my dad, Mason Sexton, is going to tell you why most analysts are wrong about a coming lost decade in stocks and why things could be much, much worse. But you can make money and you can make your way through this market if you know what you're doing and you follow the right advice. So go check out disruption2023.com. See what my dad has to say. I sit down with him. You'll see it's me and my dad. Disruption2023.com. All right, Jackson, I got a lot of friends who are censored for a whole range. I've been censored for on Twitter, on YouTube, on Facebook, you know, strikes for this, suspension for that. What do you get in trouble for? Why are you so censored?
Well, just what we were talking about a moment ago, the Ukraine war, when you upset the deep state's plans and when you expose the lies that they're putting forward about one of the largest wars that we could possibly see since World War II. Definitely, we've already seen the largest battle since World War II in Ukraine. They get upset and they lash out. And when it comes to YouTube in particular, they act, the Alphabet company, Google, they act at the behest of these warmongering powers, the intelligence community, so on and so forth. And it was just about a year ago when my YouTube was, I got two suspensions, like, totaling about a month, and then YouTube permanently demonetized my YouTube channel. So,
for what?
Since a year ago,
what was the reason?
They claimed it was promoting pro-Russian narratives on the war in Ukraine.
Wait, this is amazing. I'm sorry, I didn't know this was the YouTube. See, for me, it was always COVID stuff, like masks don't work, which now everyone goes, oh yeah, yeah. When I was saying it, a lot of people were, oh, masks are going to save you. It was ridiculous. You got demonetized from YouTube for being too pro-Russian?
Yeah. Allegedly too pro-Russian. I guess just telling the truth now is considered pro-Russian. But they the interesting part of that was they had updated their YouTube policy, and then they came after me. But it was about a month after they updated their YouTube policy on Russia and Ukraine that they did this. And I was sitting there and thinking to myself, why did it take them a month to actually come after me? Why didn't they do it immediately?
Yeah.
And Glenn Greenwald and Matt Taibbi uncovered the answer. The answer was that the Ukrainian government established this thing called the Ministry of Digital Transformation. And it's essentially their PR, front for the Ukrainian government. And they were actually coming after my YouTube channel in particular, and having thousands and thousands of bots and Discord groups and Telegram channels go and report my account. And I was just shocked when they uncovered that, because I was like, I guess, 23-year-old YouTuber that didn't go to college, whoever has a voice that challenges the establishment correctly and with aggression will be censored in the hands of this Biden administration that answers to the whims of governments like Ukraine, for example. So it's extremely concerning. And I think maybe even more concerning than the COVID stuff, the COVID censorship, because although it was complete bogus, that was done, all the COVID censorship was done under the guise of like, well, we have to protect the public safety. We have to protect grandma and grandpa's health, you know? Now with this, they're just simply stating that if you have a foreign policy view that counters the official narrative, even though there's no public safety threat here, we're going to censor you as well. It's very frightening.
And did you have any, I was thinking as I'm asking, maybe this is a ridiculous question. You have no appeal, right? I mean, they demonetize you. It's like, sucks for you, right? That's it. You're too pro-Russia. What do you say to people? I'm sure you get attacked for being pro-Russia too. I didn't mean to, but I'm throwing another question at you at the same time. And what do you say to people who say that, you're Putin's puppet? Because, your point of view, you don't have four Ukraine flags in your bio. That is true.
Yeah, there's no, like you said, no appeals whatsoever. It's complete bogus. And whatever it is, Venmo, I got banned. PayPal, I got banned from Twitter multiple times, but I'm back now under Elon. All that stuff, Twitch, same thing. But as for, the Putin puppet claim, I think that as with everything now, you're a racist, you're a Nazi, you're a sexist, you're a Putin puppet. You know, regardless of the veracity of the claim, it doesn't really matter. People are going to throw that at you. And me being pro-Russia at this point, you have to look at the material situation and you kind of do recognize that in some ways what Russia is doing is good for humanity, though that's definitely not the right thing to say. I think that it
is
the truth.
Take me into that one a little bit. That one might get a lot of people going, wait, what Russia is doing is good for humanity? Take me through that a little bit. That sounds a little strange. Go for it.
Briefly, you had the Ukrainian government that was refusing to accept the peace proposals that Putin had put forward. Regarding the, it was basically like a civil war in the Donbass from 2014 to 2022. They slaughtered about 15,000 individuals at the behest of the Ukrainian nationalists in this fighting, civilians in the Donbass. These were Ukrainian citizens. And Russia, many people within Russia, like the KPRF, Zhuganov, they were requesting that Putin step into the Donbass and do something years and years ago to stop the massacre against the citizens of Ukraine in the Donbass. And Putin refused. He kept trying to negotiate peace deals over and over and over again. And now we're learning that those peace deals that Putin was upholding his end of the bargain on were actually, no one in the West was taking these things seriously. Angela Merkel has come out over the past 3 months and said that the whole idea of these Minsk Accords, as they called them, was to give Ukraine more time for the preparation of war against Russia. So I think that it should have happened sooner, to be honest. It's unfortunate that there was a coup in Ukraine. It's unfortunate that no one adhered to these peace deals. But what's even more unfortunate is that you had all these people dying in the Donbass. You've had more civilians die over the span of those 8 years of civil war than you've had civilians die over the past year of extremely intense fighting. And that seems like a shocking statistic, but it's just the truth.
I'd want to check on that. That's, you're saying more people died in the fighting in the Donbass than have died in civilians non-military, non-soldiers have died?
Just civilians, yeah.
So how many civilians?
The United Nations, believe it or not, I mean, I don't know how much I trust the United Nations, but they say 10,000 civilians have roughly died over the past year fighting in the Donbass and all throughout Ukraine. And all independent observers recognize that it was between 13 and 15,000 civilians that died over the past like 8 to 9 years of fighting post 2014.
That to me strikes me as entirely impossible numbers. Let me just see what comes up. I'm curious how many civilians died in Ukraine. I'm just wondering what comes up. Wow. Let me see. It's saying it is. That is fascinating. Here we go. The first, I'm just going to say this. I Googled this because I like a lot of people at home. I want to be very, very clear. I would have thought the numbers were much higher. Like to the point where I'm like, hold on a second, Jackson, let me check this out. To be totally fair and transparent to everybody, it's Radio Free Europe. First thing that comes up, Radio Free Europe, which I don't think that's like a Putin, you know, Putin puppet thing or whatever. It says about 18,000. So I thought it'd be way more than that. Or whatever. And 6,500 killed and 11,684 injured. Is that just feels, how is it possible that number, let me check and see what the date, that's 2023, April of 2023.
They said like 6,500 killed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Civilians.
I mean,
yeah. I just be clear? I thought the numbers would have been based on what we see and, you know, that here, I would have thought the number would have been much higher than that.
Yeah. Wow. Both sides have done Russia and Ukraine, they've both done a pretty good job of evacuating civilians. But it does seem shocking, doesn't it?
Right.
That would be the case.
I mean, you see Bakhmut, you see the destruction of the city and the way that this is being, you know, I really do think that one of my problems with this is, look, CIA, Iraq, Afghanistan, a lot of things can be said about our presence or what we were doing, the U.S. military and otherwise. But I had a pretty good sense of what was real, what was going on there. I mean, I could read news reports and be like, that's not right. Right. You know,
yeah.
With this Ukraine stuff, I'm like, there's just so much propaganda. I've never been boots on the ground, so to speak. I've never even been to Ukraine. And I know that we're being propagandized to the point where it feels really hard to get honest broker information about what's going on there. That's not totally. And I be honest with you, I didn't want to let you say that number without me, just because in my head I'm thinking like, that can't be right. Like, it's got to be more than that. No, that apparently is the number. So very interesting. But it just goes to, I think, how fierce the propaganda is about this, because they're making it seem like this is a World War II struggle against the Nazis kind of fight. Right. And I think people are thinking millions of civilian casualties are, you know, possible here. Well, anything is possible. But so far, you know, call it less than 10,000 civilians dead in Ukraine is what this Radio Free Europe is saying. So am I missing something?
No, I think that's actually they're a pro-Western outlet. And I think that's I think if anything, that might be a bit low. But that's what they say. I mean, I don't know. I'm not, you know, bagging and tagging the bodies. But that is one thing that is noteworthy about this war compared to how we fought in, say, Vietnam. How the United States fought and counted, you know, dead Vietnamese fighters there was by simply calculating, you know, if we fire X many munitions towards the Vietnamese side, how many can we estimate we killed by virtue of how many things we fired or shot off? Here in Ukraine, Russia is actually, you know, taking over new territory, more and more territory, and they are bagging and tagging each body. So the counts are actually much more accurate than most other wars we've seen in recent history. So soldiers are dying.
I just pulled up the most recent data on this. Soldier casualties are really high, which is why I think so. The soldier casualties you're looking at, Russia has suffered. This is according to the New York Post. I mean, Washington Post, which is pulling based on some of the leaks, actually, that if you remember that guy who leaked some of the information that he had access to a few months back, a couple months ago. 200,000 Russian casualties and 40,000 killed is what they're saying. And then Ukraine has about 125,000 casualties with about 17,000 killed. So a lot of soldiers are dying in these fights. But I thought the civilian number of casualties was going to be much. That's the number that I appreciate you bringing up here, because I would have assumed that it would have been much, much higher than that. So that just goes to, you know, the way that these things are being talked about. That was really interesting, Jackson. Thank you for taking us there. I want to come back in a second and get into 2024 a little bit, and then also California versus Florida, which I think we'll both have some fun with in a second. But before we go there, I shared a story on radio recently about how there was a listener to the show who left his laptop behind in the airport. And that is a nightmare situation, right? Running from the plane, left the laptop behind because you're trying to get through the machine and you think you put it in your bag, but you didn't. Now, what do you do? Well, lucky for him, all of his data, everything, all of his work stuff, all of his personal stuff was backed up on iDrive. This is the same company that Rush Limbaugh himself talked about for years on his radio program. iDrive provides an online, off-site computer data backup for just $7 a month. So no matter where you are, with or without your regular laptop, you can access your most recent computer backup and lose all of your data. With iDrive, and not lose any of your data, basically, because you're going to be able to actually get it anywhere. It's really helpful to you because with iDrive, you can back it all up, and you can do this for your PCs, Mac, servers, mobile devices, all of it. iDrive is PC Mag's winner 8 years in a row for the best cloud backup solution for everyone. It's the easiest, most secure backup solution in the cloud. Plans start at less than $7 a month, and you can get 90% off your first year when you use my name, Buck, in the sign-up process. So go to iDrive.com. That's the letter I, iDrive.com. All right, Jackson, let's get your 2024 take first off. Are you decided already? Are you waiting to see in this primary? And then I'll ask you more questions based on how you answer that.
Haven't decided yet, but as of right now, I'm riding with Trump. That's what I'm going for right now.
You think he can win?
I think he could win if he was in prison.
Against Biden is what I mean. Forget about the primary for a second there. You think he can beat Biden?
Yeah, I do.
It's interesting you said you think he can win from prison. I do believe, and I've spoken to some very smart legal minds, like world-class, you know, former attorneys general. I mean, people who really know the law really well. And they think Trump's in real legal jeopardy. That's not to say he should be, but that's to say that the way the system is setting him up here, I mean, I think they're going to hit him with a criminal case in Georgia, obstruction charge for the Mar-a-Lago documents, and maybe even incitement to insurrection for January 6th. What do you think?
We'll see what happens. It's very risky when you start, as you know, playing with the judicial system like that and our public prosecution. I mean, I just find it insane that you have former presidents that were killing innocent people in Yemeni and Iraq each and every day, or you have former presidents who are flying with Jeffrey Epstein to his private island 30 plus times, and they're completely fine. You know, they're untouchable and they're still celebrated by the mass media. And then, of course, Donald Trump is the one who might end up in prison before this upcoming election. But again, I mean, it's been done before. We've had candidates run for president from prison before. They didn't make it too far. But I think, if anything, it would just harden Trump's base and maybe turn off some prospective independent voters. But for me, it wouldn't bother me. And I'm not even a registered Republican. I'm independent. So I would view it as the deep state coming after a truth teller, which is something so many average Americans have suffered from in the hands of these big tech companies for the past several years now.
So you're a registered independent. That's interesting to me, because I always think the challenge for Trump is it's not with the base. It's not with the it's not with the Republican Party overall. I mean, if he's the nominee, people on the right are going to come out for Trump big time. I'm going to come out for Trump. I mean, everyone's coming out for Trump who's a conservative when he's facing Biden, for sure. But independents, and when you start to narrow it down to the key states, Arizona, Georgia, Pennsylvania, Michigan, Wisconsin, Nevada, maybe Virginia, probably not. When you narrow it down to these key states, though, independents matter a whole lot. Much celebrated and talked about swing voters. How do you think Donald Trump wins enough of them in those places to beat Biden?
You know, when it comes to beating Biden, he did put forward a plan, like it or not, think of it what you will, this Build Back Better plan for actually trying to revitalize America. And I think everyone agrees it's been an abysmal failure. The question is, does Trump have something that can counter that? Or does DeSantis potentially have something that could counter that? As of right now, I mean, DeSantis just began his candidacy. He doesn't even have a fully fledged website. But everything I see from him is just opposition to the woke culture. And there's no real vision for America. With Trump, surprisingly, at least to my surprise, he's been putting those little policy videos out where he has his plans for making America great again. And I think it's just been incredible to see his plans for reindustrializing America. Obviously, he achieved the USMCA trade deal, which was a bit better than NAFTA for America. But I mean, he's talking about really revolutionary things like I don't know if you saw his plan for building freedom cities. I don't know how viable of an idea that is, but I mean, he's talking about choosing like the best city planners, architects in the nation, having them submit various proposals to create new freedom cities and having them serve as kind of hubs, as test hubs for young Americans to move in to areas that will be populated with good paying jobs, low cost homes, and beginning to rebuild America. I haven't heard any ideas like that from any presidential candidate in a long time. And I think it's something we really need. And I think when you talk about how do you reach those independent voters that are concerned about the state of our economy and the state of the fact that the Biden administration has pretty much single-handedly collapsed the dollar as a global reserve currency with the sanction warfare against Russia and now probably with China, we are isolating ourselves on the global stage. I think they want someone like Trump who isn't a toady of Russia or China, but knows how to make a deal and actually is respected by these various leaders.
So I want to ask you about California and your upcoming move to Florida, where I'm a former New Yorker who moved to Florida. So we got a lot to discuss with that in a moment here. But first off, everybody, I got married earlier this year. And when you get married, you got to think about the long term. Thank you. Thank you. You got to think about the long term, got to think about the family you're going to create and build and all those things. And you know, part of that is getting prepared. And that means having the right insurance plan. Look, I know it's kind of weird for people to think about sometimes, but you got to get your life insurance stuff squared away right away. And Policy Genius gives you a smarter way to find and buy. This is something you just have to do. It's a smart thing to do. Policy Genius was built to modernize the life insurance industry. Their technology makes it easy to compare life insurance quotes from America's top insurers. With Policy Genius, you can find life insurance policies that start at just $25 a month for $1 million of coverage. Some options offer coverage in as little as a week and avoid unnecessary medical exams. Policy Genius has licensed agents who can help you find the best fit for your need. They work for you and not the insurance companies. There are no added fees. Your personal details are kept private. Your loved ones deserve a financial safety net should the unexpected happen. And you deserve a smarter way to find and buy it. Go to policygenius.com. That's right, policygenius.com. And you'll see for yourself how easy this is. You'll get it set up, get a great price, get a great plan. All right, Jackson, you're moving. Are you an original? You have kind of some California vibes. Are you an original Californian?
Orange County.
Orange County. Oh, that's God's country, man. I grew up as a New Yorker watching, these shows like Beverly Hills 90210 and the OC. And I was like, man, that would be really nice. But, I know you've got a little stronghold of sanity there. It's a very beautiful place. What made you finally decide you're going to leave arguably the nicest part of California to move to Florida?
Well, first I moved to Los Angeles. I lived here for the past 2 years and, Orange County was just a bit slow for me. I'm 23 and I was looking for a bit more life in a city. I like big cities and I moved there and, I'm still here. I'm in downtown LA and I'm not even being hyperbolic right now. I mean, if you've been to LA, everyone says it is the worst place in our country right now. It is every day when I'm walking, I think we're sending $200 billion to Ukraine, but I just passed by six homeless people and, four piles of poo on the ground walking to my coffee. It's crazy. Miami, I went for the first time there this winter and I was just so in love. I took my girlfriend there and we just loved it. And ever since we went there, we're just like, we got to move to Miami. And you talk about the politics, the culture, the people, the taxes. all that stuff. It makes it a very inviting, the weather, very inviting place to live.
Do you get any sense from Los Angelinos that are they in denial about what's happening to their city still, or do they recognize that the state of California has lost hundreds of thousands of people and this is going to have a lot of downstream impacts, including in the next census?
I think there's a lot of people who understand what's happening. You know, you have average people that understand that's what's happening, but I think you have a lot of like activists that live here that just think it's the bastion for progressivism or something to that effect. But the stats don't lie. Everyone understands that businesses and people are leaving California, in particular Los Angeles. And it's just very sad because it used to be a beautiful place to live. I mean, everyone wanted to live here. Now I wake up and I think, why on earth would I wake up? You know, if you're making enough money and you're not tied to a job, why on earth would I live here when I don't have to? Why would I choose to live here? So it's very sad.
Yeah, well, that's what happened to me in New York, man. Well, welcome to the Florida Revolution. I'll tell Governor Ron DeSantis that you send your thanks to being. I know you like Trump, but the governor here is doing a great job as the governor.
He is.
And we'll see you in Miami, my friend. Jackson Hinkle, follow him on Twitter. And I'm sure we'll be seeing more of you, man. Thanks so much.
Thanks for having me on.
Since 9/11, the Tunnel to Towers Foundation has been committed to supporting our nation's first responders and veterans, heroes who put their lives on the line for our communities and our country. Heroes like U.S. Army Major Jonathan Turnbull. Major Turnbull sustained devastating injuries at the hands of an ISIS suicide bomber. The complete loss of his left eye, a puncture to his right eye, he needed more than 20 surgeries and countless hours of rehabilitation. Tunnel to Towers paid off his mortgage and gave him a specially adapted smart home designed for his needs. He moves around his home more easily now. His home also gives him hope. With help from people like you, the foundation supports families like the Turnbulls. Join Tunnel to Towers in supporting America's heroes, our nation's catastrophically injured veterans and first responders, homeless veterans, Gold Star families, and the families of fallen first responders. Donate $11 a month to Tunnel to Towers at t2t.org. That's T, the number 2t.org. 95 cents of every dollar goes directly to their programs.
America, we are endowed by our Creator with certain unalienable rights, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. At Grand Canyon University, we believe in equal opportunity, and the American dream starts with purpose. By honoring your career calling, you impact your family, your friends, and your community. The pursuit to serve others is yours. Find your purpose at Grand Canyon University. Private, Christian, affordable. Visit gcu.edu.
More Than a Movie is back with Season 2. I'm your host, Alex Fumero. And each week, I'm going to talk to the people behind your favorite movies. From The Godfather, Andy Garcia.
He has the smarts of Vito, the temper of Sonny, the warmth of Fredo, and the coldness of Michael.
To the legend behind La Bamba, Lou Diamond Phillips.
When I walked in, I didn't think I had a shot at Richie because John Stamos's picture was already up on the wall.
Listen to More Than a Movie on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, I'm Michael Rappaport.
And I'm Kibi Rappaport.
And together we're hosting Rappaport's Reality Podcast.
We have a passion for reality TV, and we're inviting you into our living room.
We're dissecting the drama, and we're giving praise to the single greatest form of entertainment on television today. That is right. Reality TV is the greatest form of entertainment on television today.
Listen to Rappaport's Reality with me, Kibi Rappaport.
And me, Michael Rappaport, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcast.